Hello and welcome to the JB Loves Beer podcast, featuring reviews, reactions and opinions on all things beer. Join me, JB, on my odyssey through the world of craft IPAs, pales, stouts and saisons. It is August and a pretty hot one too. Finally, the summer has arrived in South London, and this is coinciding with what has ham-fistedly been labelled unlockdown. But despite the dodgy label, it does feel like things are returning to normal, and this is a good thing. Who knew we would crave normal so much? In particular, it means that beer, beautiful beer, can increasingly be enjoyed in ever more normal ways and in normal settings, which is blooming marvellous. In recent weeks, I've been to a few pub gardens, a few bottle shops, and even a few brewery tap rooms, and it has been really positive to see them busy, whilst of course still socially distanced. This episode of the podcast is going to follow pretty much the same formula as the last, kicking off with beer reviews, before heading to chit-chat and chinwag territory, and betwixt these two, I'm also going to throw in a small live, not live, review of the Hole in the Wall pub in Chichester. So let's do it, let's get the ball rolling and head to review land. Roll over Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, there's a new combo in town, JB and the London Beer Factory. I first heard of these guys, I think, in 2017, although there is a possibility I may have had something of theirs a little bit earlier than that, but I'm going to stick with 2017 because that was the time that I remember visiting their brewery in Gypsy Hill, and it's actually on exactly the same estate as Gypsy Hill Brewing Company. So I remember deciding to go there because it was a kind of genius idea of, you know, two breweries in one for one afternoon, test a few beers, classico. And when I went there, it was pretty dead, if I'm honest. Now, to be fair, I went in autumn and it was cold. I think it might have been raining. So I think I was the only person there. And I went and had something on tap, and I think I had something in a can. And I remember not being particularly blown away, if I'm honest. But 2017 is a lifetime ago when it comes to, you know, contemporary craft beer and the way the scene is moving. And since then, a lot of changes have happened with these guys. Firstly, I think they've gone through a big kind of rebrand, firstly in terms of the type of beer that they produce, because I remember feeling that their beer was kind of real ale-y and kind of aimed at that sort of market. Now I would say they're very much, you know, of the here and the now, and very much, you know, in the kind of craft beer scene. They've also gone through a big kind of art rebrand. The can art used to be very much like sort of cartoons and drawn to sort of look like they symbolised different parts of London, I think it was, or characters from historical London. It was all a bit confused. Since then, they've simplified it and they've gone from this kind of marbled effect on their cans, which is crazy attractive, especially on their tall boys, because they do a kind of kind of got a shiny meets matte effect. It's really hard to describe unless you pick one up, which I am definitely going to recommend. Part of that revamp also over the last couple of years has meant that they've kind of done a bit of outreach, and what I mean by that is they've colonised a bit of the Bermondsey Beer Mile and opened up a bar there known as the Barrel Project. And this is because not only do they now do their stuff in barrels, and by that I mean they're doing kind of slow fermented, wild fermented stuff in kind of bottles, so they're kind of challenging the breweries that do the saisons and so on. They also mean by having this little colony that they're getting in that footfall and getting their beers out, and it's a nice little venue. It's already been, you know, done up a number of times in the years that I've gone since 2017. It's looking pretty sharp, and you know, now that we are in unlockdown, who knows, one day soon I might get to go back and see what it looks like now. It's probably had another facelift for all I know. So anyway, lots of reconfigurations, lots of changes for them, but I think it's working because I'm finding their stuff in a lot of bottle shops, and of course you can now find it in major supermarkets too. So I guess well done there, things must be moving apace. And you know, we're talking here about a big step up in quality, so I thought it was about time that I actually reviewed some of their stuff. So, three reviews. We're going to kick off with review number 36. This is Mohawk River Pale Ale. Straight away again, the red, blue and white marbled can art is stunning. It really draws you in. These guys just jump off the shelf, I find. The pour was a pretty deep, opaque orange with a medium to small off-white head of, again, medium bubbles. The nose was melon and mango, which carried through to the actual flavours themselves. rounding off with some gentle hops. This was a nice, light summer bev, ideal for sipping whilst flipping some burgers on the barbecue. I'm giving it a solid 3.5 out of 5. Review number 37, this was Big Sur West Coast IPA. Now, again, smashing can art, marbled blues, whites and golds. The pour is a mostly translucent light caramel colour with a medium to large white head of tight bubbles. The nose was hoppy and piney, so my taste buds went into complete overdrive, leaving me salivating before I'd even had my first sip. On tasting, there was a definite dryness and pine, as I would hope and expect from a Westie, but on the swallow, I tasted a bit too much maltiness for my liking, so subjectively, I prefer more of a hop kick in my West Coast beers rather than a malty kick. So this was just a 2.75 out of 5. Review number 38 is of Business Decisions Double IPA. I also think this was double dry hop too. Now, this was a collaboration with Baskeland Brewing, who I have tried before, but I can't pick out a specific beer to tell you what I've tried. I just know I've had it. So I do rate them. But I noticed, and I think this is quite interesting, that their logo has a striking similar look to it as that of Cloudwaters. Probably just a coincidence, who knows. The marble can art this time was made up of reds and greens and golds, and in fact even the font and the type face was all gold, which was particularly attractive. The pour was similar to Mohawk River, so orange and opaque, but with a much bigger head this time. The nose was infinitely richer and heavier than the other two. Balanced but bold citrus and hops in the flavour, I would say. And you know, this taste was massive. It was big, very hop forward, very full tasting. And upon swallowing, one felt the booziness for the first time because this was much bigger than the other two. And it left a nice drying sensation, which felt very kind of satisfying. I really couldn't leave this beer alone. I felt like it was gone in 2 seconds flat, and I was gasping for another. And unfortunately, I've not been able to track one down. So it was, you know, a unicorn, a one-off. And because of that, I've got to give it top bins. It's 5 out of 5. So London Beer Factory, they have really run with it. They're doing really well. I love their stuff. Looking forward to visiting the brewery and the barrel project again soon, hopefully. I think, to be honest, their most kind of controversial element of them, perhaps what they're most well known for, other than being in, you know, Tesco, is they have orbital can lids, ring pulls. So, you know, when you pull the ring of the actual can, theirs takes the whole lid off. I quite like it because it feels like you can walk along the street drinking it and it feels like you're kind of holding a glass. But other people really, really hate it. But you know what? Sometimes these places, these breweries exist to be Marmite, and for me, I love it. So keep doing what you're doing, guys. Thumbs up from me. Next, it's time for a live, not live review of a pub I visited recently in this unlockdown period, namely The Hole in the Wall in Chichester. Now, The Hole in the Wall is part of a small chain of pubs owned by Big Smoke Brewing Company. And I've mentioned these pubs actually quite a few times because I just, I love them and I have very strong opinions about them. So The Hole in the Wall is part of the same gang as The Antelope in Surbiton, The Albion in Kingston, The Flintgate over in somewhere in Surrey, can't remember exactly where it is, and a whole bunch of other ones as well. And I went on a tiny little kind of staycation holiday with the family, and we had the opportunity to go via Chichester for the day, and you know, that was good for me because I knew in the back of my mind that this meant I was going to get to go to The Hole in the Wall. So off we went for our lunch. You have to kind of walk down one of the main high streets in Chichester, and there's a tiny little road off it that, if it weren't for a kind of a sign that was stuck or hanging up or leaning against a tree, I think it was, saying The Hole in the Wall this way, you could easily just walk straight past it. As you go down the little road though, Slightly on your left-hand side, you're sort of greeted with the large white mass of brick, which is the hole in the wall. All looks very nice outside. Nice hanging sign in the very sort of distinctive, stylized artwork that Big Smoke Brew use. So in we popped, and of course, straight away, we're confronted with the slightly unusual setup that we're all seeing as normal now in the new normal, which is, you know, having to walk around the pub in kind of one direction, being in certain places you can't stand or sit, you know, needing to be distanced from other people and that sort of thing. And it was absolutely fine because it was the middle of the day, so there weren't too many people in there anyway. We were shown to our table by one of the people working there, and we took our seats and informed that we would be doing our orders using the app, which fortunately I had already downloaded because a couple of weeks previously my partner and I went for a pint in the Sussex Arms in Twickenham. So I'd already downloaded it. In terms of the interior, it's exactly what you would expect from a Big Smoke pub. It's kind of wood panelling, but it's all very crisp and fresh in terms of the paintwork there. And you know, some nice artwork again on the walls. In particular, I'm a big fan of their painted glass signs that they have in all their pubs. If you will know them. It's kind of a classic old school thing. Usually you have these kind of big mirrored pieces of work with kind of gold filigree and gold leaf used on the inside of them. Most of the time they're just advertising a type of ale, or be like an old brewery like Truman's have a lot of them in their old Victorian pubs, and sure enough that's what Big Smoke have done. They've got one for the hole in the wall, just as they have in all their pubs. They're particularly kind of nice to look at, very aesthetically pleasing. In terms of what I had whilst I was there, I had a lovely pint of Medicine Man IPA, which for me really evokes the feeling of craft beer about 3 or 4 years ago when I was first really getting into it. And it's, you know, nice strong hoppy beer, really enjoyable, and they don't brew it all the time, so when it comes out it's always very exciting to see that it's on tap or in can, and I usually try and snap it up. So Medicine Man, delicious. I tend to find that whenever I go to any one of these pubs, I always order the same thing. But in a way, I kind of see it as the litmus test of exactly how good the kitchen is at the pub. So I always order basically the chicken burger. So the sort of like fried chicken with a sort of mayo. Sometimes it's a pesto mayo, sometimes it's a kind of spicy mayo. And you get some of their skin on fries and some coleslaw. So I had that, absolutely delicious, really, really enjoyable. And we soaked in the ambiance. My son was running around screaming at one point, probably annoyed some of the people there, but you know, generally speaking, everyone was very kind of kind and pleasant and happy and smiley. And you know, who doesn't like a slightly empty pub? I mean, it's just one of those wonderful things in the world, isn't it? And you know, ordering on the app, which means that you've already paid, it just gets delivered to you. You know, I could really get used to that. It kind of feels a bit sort of continental. You know how when you go to Germany or you go to France or Spain or whatever, and you have table service. In the UK, we've always had this whole go to the bar kind of thing. And when you do go to a bar that does table service, it kind of freaks us out. But I think maybe via apps, that's how we're going to kind of get over this as a kind of community, as a society, and get used to table service. So, you know, even after COVID eventually leaves us, I hope this continues, because I could really get on board with this, I would say. So, hole in the wall, big thumbs up. Go visit it if ever you're in the area. And, you know, it carries on in the whole Big Smoke tradition. Pretty much every one of their pubs I've enjoyed. I've still got a couple still to go. Some are slightly better than the others. Nothing's going to ever beat the Antelope and Surbiton for me, because it's always going to have a special space in my heart. But there we have it, a live, not live review of the hole in the wall. Time now for some back and forth and banter with regards to what's going on in the world of craft right now. So the last month has actually been quite eventful. I think there's at least three things that have kind of popped up on my radar that, you know, I've been thinking about and wanted to kind of share with you. The first one is probably about a month ago now. Cloudwater, or the kind of head honchos at Cloudwater, shared a very strange blog post, which kicked off with, I think it was an image of lots and lots of words, and all of the words were the names of horrific massacres, killings, genocides, and horrific events, horrible events that have happened to mankind over the last 100 years or so, some of them much older. And from that, a sort of long spiraling blog post kind of followed, which was all about how COVID-19, coronavirus, has fundamentally, you know, shaken up our society, how we've, you know, sadly lost a huge number of people to this disgusting disease, and how there's going to be these huge ramifications of it, not only just in terms of the kind of the epidemic itself and the kind of the disease itself, but also in terms of the economy and how that's going to affect people's lives and livelihoods going forward, and how we're going to see unemployment and how we're going to see businesses folding and so on. And then shoehorned into the back of this sort of otherwise quite thought-provoking piece was suddenly a kind of explanation for why Cloudwater had decided to do a bunch of things with regard, in sense of what, how they were going to run their business. Things like how they were now no longer selling cans to bottle shops up and down the country, because some bottle shops hadn't paid their arrears, and this meant that they were now struggling for money, which seems, you know, not good, but I don't know whether or not it's quite in the same league as, say, a genocide. And how now Cloudwater were going to operate their own delivery service straight to, you know, individual consumers. You know, me, for example, if I was to buy it, they'd be delivering straight to me from, say, Bermondsey, where they have their bar. And again, this was because they needed to ensure that the money was going straight back into their coffers. Otherwise, they would not be able to afford to pay their staff, and this could mean the end of the business, and these sorts of things. And you know, amidst it all, there was a lot of kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, telltale, it's kind of almost dog whistle phrases and references that seemed to imply that there were people in the industry that had upset Cloudwater, and now this was then kind of, in a way, getting back at them. But the odd piece of it all was that it was all wrapped in this, you know, conversation, or like was placed in this kind of as a sort of plus something note at the end of this big conversation about the devastating impact of this horrible epidemic that we're all living through. And it just felt very odd and a bit tone deaf and a bit kind of almost like, I don't even know, is it bandwagoning? It's sort of very, very strange. And I didn't really know how to react to it. I talked to my partner about it. She was slightly confused by it. And then I even sort of chatted to the folks in the local bottle shops about it to see what they thought. And they too were quite kind of confused by it too. So all in all, I think we can take from it that now Cloudwater aren't going to be selling their cans to bottle shops, so you can't find it, which will hurt bottle shops because, you know, Cloudwater are a big pull. They do, you know, they're known for good beer and people want to buy it. You can obviously now get some Cloudwater technically in Tesco because they have their collab with BrewDog, which you can buy for £3. So I guess that's where people will be buying it, or otherwise you'll be buying it straight from their website. And I do want Cloudwater to continue to exist. They're a good brewery. And I even have one of the T-shirts. Two of the T-shirts. What do you know? But I don't really want them making sort of strange posts about genocides. It just all seemed very odd. Not that I'm saying politics and beer can't mix. Of course they can. In fact, maybe they should. It's a great, great conversation to have sometimes, is, you know, chat politics whilst having a few beers. Better, in fact. Maybe all politicians should be drunk all the time. Probably would be a good idea. But yeah, just sort of seemed very strange. And, you know, I'm sure the blog post is still up. If you haven't read it, go read it. See what you think about it. They did do a kind of clarification post afterwards, but it all seemed a little bit too late by then. By then, I think kind of the damage had been done. And I've heard it said before that, you know, reputation takes a long time to build, moments to destroy, and, you know, eternity to rebuild. And I hope this hasn't kind of tarnished them too much in other people's eyes, and indeed my own. I still don't entirely know how I feel about it, and I haven't bought a Cloudwater beer since. So there we go. Anyway, next. Now, I can't explain all the ins and outs of this next thing. I'm just going to do it in the most basic way I possibly can, which is, you may have heard of it, the Small Brewers Duty Reform. So you may or may not know that, well, beer in the UK is very heavily taxed, as in there's a lot of duty placed on it by the government, in terms of when it's made and when it's sold. And, you know, lots of the money that breweries otherwise would make is paid in duty. And, you know, you could say to a certain extent that's right, because, you know, whilst alcohol is a very enjoyable thing, it also is a problem in many ways. It is a drug, we do need to remember that. It is It can damage people. Some people become addicted to it and all the rest of it. So you could argue that the duty that gets paid that goes to the government means that they can spend money on other things to arguably repair the damage that sometimes alcohol does. But anyway, that's a completely different debate. Historically, however, there has been some relief for that duty for small brewers. So very small breweries often have paid, they still have to pay the duty, but they get a sort of relief from some of it, so they don't have to pay all of it, up until you get to a certain size of brewery. And by that we mean, once you start producing X amount of beer, then you have to start paying more and more, and you lose the relief, as it were. Now, recently there's been a big discussion, I say recently, last decade, probably two decades, been a discussion about whether or not that needs to be reformed. So much so that the SBDRC, which is the Small Brewers Duty Reform Coalition, was formed, and it's lobbied governments, albeit it would seem now successfully, to bring about changes. And some people, in particular very, very small breweries, have been doing some reading into this, and it turns out that the SBDRC is led by some medium-sized brewers who want to modify it so that they get more relief. And it doesn't mean necessarily that the really big brewers, they won't get any relief, so it's not going to help them. But for some reason, it's going to turn the screw on the very, very small brewers. And we're talking here about the craft breweries, you know, the tiny ones that are in a single archway somewhere in the country producing beer, and, you know, the stuff that we've all fallen in love with over the last few years. And so this looks like a smash and grab. This looks like medium-sized breweries looking for a way to try and shore up their own kind of position in the market to the detriment of their smaller competitors, whilst not taking on the big boys, because it's almost like they've realised, well, you can't take on the big boys, the AB InBevs of the world, because they can swallow this kind of duty. It's just not a big deal for them. They can pass it on to their customers by producing beer en masse. And it's sad. You know, I've had to follow this mostly via Twitter. Beer Twitter is difficult sometimes, because you just finding the threads and finding out what the conversations are can take a while, but I've managed to couple it together. I'm going to say a bit of a shout out to a chap called at Beer Nouveau, who I think is actually related to a brewery up in Manchester called Beer Nouveau Brewery or something like that. I'm not entirely sure, to be precise. But I would, if you're interested in kind of the ins and outs of this, if you go to the guy's blog, you just type Beer Nouveau into Google, it's pretty much the first thing that comes up. There's a whole range of things about SBDRC, some of which I read, some of which I haven't. But as I say, the kind of take home from it is that lots of very, very small breweries are going to really be hurt by this if it goes through, whilst the medium breweries are going to kind of do better, and the big breweries, it's not even on their radar, they're not even paying attention to it, it means so little to them. And in particular, what I like is that Beer Nouveau has kind of provided a list of breweries who've made statements about this, and even identified breweries that are in support of it. And guess what? They're the ones that are leading SBDRC. So this is, if I name and shame them, Exmoor Ales, Harvey's, Hepworth, Hogsback, J.W. Lee's, Lancaster, Theakston's, Timothy Taylor's, Wadworth and Wimbledon. The ones I would pick out is, firstly, really upset with Harvey's. I went to Lewis not too long ago and really liked their beer, you know, traditional ale type stuff. But these guys were like, I thought, cool. And turns out they're not. Of course, there's also Timothy Taylor's. You know, Timothy Taylor's landlord is considered this, well, it's always been considered a sort of, you know, a benchmark of craft, of real ale when it comes to, you know, newer breweries opening up if they decide to go into that field. And now they're just going to be considered nothing. You know, a lot of hate on them now. A lot of people turn around and go, I can't believe they're behaving this way. It's disgusting. They've ruined their reputation and all the rest of it. And the other one I've got to mention is Wimbledon. Wimbledon's just down the road from me. I've even been there once, you know, to the actual brewery. And bizarrely sat there whilst all the staff were having a barbecue and meeting some Chinese brewers that had come over. And they invited me to sit down with them. Random. Really, really random. The fact that these guys are now going to be are involved in this, I'm so shocked. You know, I was actually going to say something about the fact that apparently the other week Wimbledon Brewery had their 4x4 branded 4x4 van nicked, and isn't that terrible? Don't we need to, you know, keep an eye out to see if anyone sees it? Do you know what? Sod them, don't care. Apparently they're just horrible nasty to small brewers. So, as I say, don't understand all of it, but the idea that this could in any way endanger small breweries, which is what craft is based on, and you know what I am sure we love, you know, going visiting these tiny little places, talking to the brewers and trying their beers. The fact that this might disappear or be harmed in some way because of these middle-sized breweries, well, they're not getting any of my money anymore. So Simple as that. And I'm going to make sure that I talk about this to everyone I know who would normally drink this sort of beer and ensure that they do it, you know, do it anyway. So it's a small protest. You know, it's only going to be a teardrop in an ocean, but every little helps, shall we say. Final thing, and again, it's a bit of outrage, I guess, concerns BrewDog. Now, I kind of mention BrewDog pretty much every episode, and usually I defend them. This one I'm really confused by, and it's not actually the BrewDog part of it I'm confused by. I understand why they've done this. It's the other people involved. So BrewDog, you may have heard recently, especially if you've been on the Beerstagram, have released what they call Double Punk. Now, Double Punk is a double IPA version of their Punk IPA. And I was quite excited about this when I saw it, because for me, Punk IPA has changed, okay? It's not the same beer it was 5 years ago when I first had it, or whenever it first came out. I think it was 2016. And that's okay, because obviously beers change, and I imagine as they've scaled up and the cost of brewing it in the way they used to brew it has become prohibitive, they've then changed it. And all beers change. It's just one of those things, especially if it's from one of these kind of biggish companies. It's the same as Beavertown, how, you know, Gamma-ray does not taste like Gamma-ray anymore. Bloody hell, well, I've reviewed that, you know what my reaction to that was. So, fine, it changes. And I was excited, because I thought, do you know what? I bet you Double Punk will taste like what I remember Punk IPA tasting like. And I was giving it the benefit of the doubt in terms of, you know, my palate's developed and I prefer heavier, stronger beers, so surely this is going to fit. On the day it was going to be released, turns out the kind of the exclusive had been given to Tesco. You could already buy Double Punk by ordering using the BrewDog app. So if you have a local BrewDog bar, you can get it delivered to you. I hadn't done that because I hadn't got round to it. I thought I'll wait. And sure enough, Tesco got the exclusive. And I've mentioned this chap before at Domo Beers on Instagram. He's the chap who buys all the beer for Tesco. He did the big announcement, guys, look, we've got this new beer, and it's great. And, you know, he always does this thing where on the day they announce the new beer, you can win, like, a pack of 24 if you do the whole like and follow and all that nonsense, which I don't do anymore because I never win, so it's pointless. So I mean, it doesn't sound great, but it is what it is. Simultaneously, however, as him doing it, and I get why he does it, because it's his job, fine, it's literally his job, he gets paid to do that, of course he's going to do it. Simultaneously, about seven other semi-big, and by that I mean as in they've got, you know, followings of thousands of people on Instagram, people who are clearly in the orbit of Domo Beers, his friends I assume, or people he's met through the industry, but people who are not working for Tesco, people who are just like indie people like you and I, you know, posting our beers and all the rest of it, having the chat. Seven other people simultaneously hosted their own competition, saying that Tesco have given me 24 of these beers to give away, you know, like and subscribe and do all this nonsense, and I'll be sending it to whoever gets picked out of a hat this time next week. So essentially, what Domo Beers had done, or what Tesco had done, is they'd harnessed this behaviour that goes on in the Beerstagram world, which is, oh, I've reached 2,000 followers, I'm going to give away some beer free, you know, get your friends to join in by doing this, that and the other, a way of harvesting followers and likes. They harness that across a whole bunch of people, co-opting them in order to do it. So basically these people are doing ad work for Tesco, and therefore vicariously for BrewDog as well. And I can kind of forgive BrewDog for doing it, because as far as they're concerned, you know, it's just an advertising campaign. And also, it's technically a guerrilla one, isn't it? Because it's all very, you know, grassroots on Beerstagram. But these other seven people who suddenly were, like, being co-opted into it, I don't know why. It just felt really strange to me. It just didn't sit right. It felt like it was almost taking the language and the vernacular of Beerstagram and turning it into something really... well, I guess the word would be corporate, and something really kind of plastic and fake. Because, you know, I've never done a giveaway, but when you see people go, oh, I've got 2,000 followers, I'm going to give away a couple of my favourite beers and one of my glasses to whoever is, you know, whoever I pick out of a hat if you like my posts over the next week, that seems like a really kind of almost like pay it forward sort of thing. Like, you know, oh, you know, thank you for being part of my journey. Here, I'm going to give away some free beer. This just felt very like, oh... a cynical attempt to hijack something nice to try and advertise, well, Double Punk. So, I don't know. Maybe I haven't got the right and wrongs of it. Maybe it doesn't all work out. Maybe I'm being a hypocrite. Maybe I don't really know what I think. I just thought it seemed odd. and I hope it doesn't happen again. And I've got to be honest, those people who did that, who engaged in it, I've now muted them. I haven't quite unfollowed them, but I've muted them, so I don't look at their stories and I don't look at their posts anymore. And again, it's like a mini, mini, micro protest, which probably will have literally no impact, and I don't care. But I feel like I felt just be like, I don't even want to see these people anymore, their posts. I don't care how good their art, you know, their arty pictures are of the same beer that I'm drinking. It's just, I don't know, it doesn't sit right. So that's that. Make of it what you will. Maybe you've got your own opinions. Maybe you've got your own opinions about Cloudwater or your own opinions about SBDRC. Let me know. I'd be really interested to hear them. And, you know, respond to me on Instagram and that sort of thing. But there we go. There we have it. That's it from me this month. Thank you so much for tuning in once again. If you have any thoughts, opinions or ideas you would like to share with me, then catch me on Instagram at jblovesbeer, on Twitter at jblovesbeer, or untapped at jblovesbeer_. Till next time, that's it. Thank you very much.